the challenge is I'm running out of money. You know, I only have 1 or 2 months salary left, you know, for that, for a team.
From Value Invest Asia, this is The Asian Mavericks. We explore the hidden stories of successful founders, business leaders, and investors in Asia. Here's your host, Stanley Lim.
This week, we chat with the founder of InvestingNote, Shaniston Lim. InvestingNote is today the largest investment community platform in Singapore. It has also expanded its business now to Malaysia, Thailand, and Indonesia. This year, InvestingNote has actually merged with Share Investor, the established investment platform in the region. And that deal valued both companies together at around $30 million. However, it has not been all smooth sailing for Shaniston. In fact, he went through some real tough times, and there were multiple times where InvestingNote might have failed. We will get to all that, but today let's start with the beginning with Shaniston way back in his childhood. You grew up in China,
yes,
right? And you want to tell us a little bit more about your life growing up? Were your family close, and how do you get this entrepreneurial spirit in you? From family?
Yeah, I think this is a good question. Quite a lot of people asking me, like, why Shaniston, you know, startup journey is so tough, and why do you still want to actually, you know, keep pushing for this and, you know, make it work? So I have to say that probably a lot of things is because my family's influence as well. I was born in a village, you know, in China, Fujian province. So both of my parents, actually, they didn't really go to school. So my mother never studied at all, and my father only studied until primary 3 or 4 only. But even when we were in such a bad environment, you know, in China last time, my father is the one actually who trying to find any way actually he can make the family live better, you know. So he has this kind of spirit. So he was finding every opportunity, and he essentially was a businessman. So he did a lot of business before, you know, for mining business, you know, have a lot of factories before as well. So that kind of things actually helped me to build the fighting spirits I have, you know, in my body.
Right, okay. So since you were young, you saw how your father really struggled and strive to protect and provide for the family.
Yes.
But is he open to you about his journey? Like, do he bring you to work or show you, or try to cultivate you? Or it's just something that you just, from observation?
It's more like the things that my father show me, you know, in terms of what he has been through. I can give you one example. So, you know, one thing I remember until now, that incident probably happens at the age of, I can't remember the exact, maybe it's definitely 7 or 8 years old, you know, because I was staying in a village until 9 years old. Then after that, I moved to a town. So that was probably at the age of 6 or 7. I remember very clearly. So basically what happened is one day, my father, you know, came back home, but he was actually very worried, you know, and I can see that, you know, but the reason is, he was talking to my mother, and basically they were saying that there's one worker was seriously injured in the mine, you know, because the mine sometimes is quite dangerous. It can be collapsed, you know, it can be, a lot of things can happen inside. So there's one worker was seriously injured and he might even die, you know. So that's the things actually they were discussing. And as a kid, when you hear the word, you know, someone dying, you know, you are panicked, you know, and you're very scared. So that thing actually made me remember until now, you know. And after that, you know, I saw, you know, basically it's like a truck, you know, carrying someone, you know, passing by my house, you know. So that's something actually, you know, made me remember even more, you know, for that. So my father has been through those tough times, but he's still fighting for that, you know. So it made me, you know, remember this, you know, until now.
Right. Okay. Well, definitely I can sense that he has a very big impact on you. And of course, after you started growing up, and then you have chosen to come to Singapore for your university. Is that a choice by yourself, or is a family decision?
I guess that's a fate, you know, for me to come to Singapore. Originally, I actually never planned to study abroad, you know, for that. So it's just like a Chinese, you know, when you grow up and study and you choose some university in other major cities in China. I was a good student, you know, fortunately last time. So I was one of the top students in my school last time. So I have a lot of choice in terms of which uni I have to go to. But unfortunately, you know, I was aiming too high. So I was aiming one university in Shanghai. You know, this is really the top universities over there. But I was missing by 1 mark, you know, to enter into a uni. So the China system actually has a way to for you to choose, you know, a few choices. The first choice is which university, second choice another university, third choice you can choose another one. If the first choice fail, then probably the second choice, the university might pick you.
Mm.
So for my second choice and third choice, right, basically I surpassed their benchmark very high, you know. But unfortunately, these two unis, they have enough people, students, who choose their uni as the first choice. So they prefer students who choose the first choice. But so unfortunately, I didn't get into it.
Oh.
Then after that, I went to the fourth choice. It's a university in Changsha, you know, called Zhongnan Dashue, you know. So when I received, you know, the notice that I was admitted into the university, basically it stated that there is a simple opportunities, you know, you can come here to study in the university. But then I have to go through another exams and interviews, you know, conducted by Singapore MOE. So I decided to take on a further challenge. Although I just finished the university entrance exam, which is, you know, very tough. You know, everyone knows that, you know, China, this exam is a period that you suffer a lot, you know, but that mentally, you know. Yeah. And I decided to take over this challenge again, you know, so I was very fortunate to be able to come here because I passed the exam. I passed the interview as well. And I still remember a few MOE officials came to the university in Zhongnan Dashue. I was there for 3 months. So they conducted an interview in English, you know, and I was able to make it through. So there's a few, there was probably about 1,000 students actually trying to come here, you know.
Right.
So I was fortunate, you know, to be selected one of them, you know.
Flashback, you know, you have made cake come to Singapore.
Yeah.
What's your first impression when you came here?
Okay, that's 20 years ago. So the impression, okay, the first impressions I have definitely is actually a very beautiful city. But as a second impression is basically before I came to Singapore, I feel that probably I was able to speak English well, you know. I was lucky to be one of the top students there. But yeah, unfortunately, when I came to Singapore, I realized how come I don't understand what they are talking about. Is my English something wrong with my English or something wrong with them? That's really the first impression. Like, what are they talking about? How come I can't understand at all?
Okay.
Yeah, but after 20 years, now I speak like them, you know, English now.
Okay. Yeah. How was your university life overall? Was it still as competitive? Do you feel like just as competitive as you were back in China, or it was a different kind of university culture?
I was only in China's university for 3 months, so it's actually a very short experience. Over here, you know, I have a longer experience. But overall, I think there's a few differences. First difference actually I remember very clearly is in China, it's still divided into different classes, and you stay together with your classmates who are studying in the same class, you know, so, and you still have a teacher who is in charge of the students, you know. But here in Singapore, everyone seems to be very independent, you know, which is something actually I initially don't get used to it, you know, because we are all taken care of by parents and teachers all the way. Suddenly come here, you're on your own, you know, so, and you have a lot of freedoms. You know, even you don't want to go to class, it's fine. Nobody going checking on you. Are you there or not? You know, so initially I was actually not getting used to it, you know, but after a while, 8 o'clock in the morning classes, forget about it, you know. Let me just see a bit more, you know.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So very, 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 very easy way to disseminate into the culture. And for your course, you ended up taking computer science?
Yes, it's actually under School of Computing in US. Right. So the school, it offers information system.
Right.
So basically it offers both programming courses and at the same time something related to business development.
Right, okay. And why did you choose this course?
First thing is actually for Chinese scholars to come to NUS, we don't have much choice. You know, we have to choose something related to engineering.
Mm.
So I have to say 20 years ago, maybe something about programming, they don't feel very fancy that type.
Mm.
These few years, programming is something actually all the students want to, you know, go into, you know, because of all the tech developments and, you know, all tech companies, startup companies as well. So second thing is actually I want to still have a passion to see how I can start a business in future, but at the same time I want to learn about programming.
I remember you telling me that you know, during the last year of your university,
yeah,
you actually attempted to start a business.
Yeah.
Maybe you can tell me the story about it.
Yes. So just like I mentioned, actually in NUS, right, students has a lot of much more freedoms over here compared to China's university. So initially, at the first few years, you know, suddenly there's no one actually, you know, managing me. You know, so me together with a lot of friends actually, you know, enjoy the freedoms. So we play our games, you know, having girlfriends, you know. Yeah, at the same time, actually, you know, we had a lot of fun. And but at the same time, actually, I was actually mixing up with a lot of friends, you know, making up friends because, just like I mentioned, I don't understand what they're talking, you know, the language is one of the barrier. So I feel that maybe I should overcome that. And I was someone actually really like to make new friends. So I play a lot with them, you know, speak to them, you know, learn a lot of things from them about their country, their cultures as well. So that was the first 3 years I have, you know, but when it comes to the fourth year, I start to question myself as well, you know, what am I going to do, you know, since I'm going to graduate already. But then I just thinking that I'm a lucky guy, so there's always opportunity here. So one of my two friends they're starting a computer science as well. So they came to me and said, Shanice, I'm actually going to start a company. Basically, what we are doing is we offer website developments. At that time, iPhone is not the things yet, mm-hmm. You know, it haven't started yet. So offer website developments, consultancy service, you know, as programmers, they always do, you know, for the service. So I thought maybe it's a good opportunity, you know, and I always want to start with something, but I just don't know how at the time. And one of my co-founders, basically, he went to a MOC program, which is basically NUS offered him to have an internship in overseas companies. And these are startup companies. So he has a good foundations and experience. So I sort of joined him and to start this together as a co-founder.
And how did it go? How do you start finding your first client?
that was tough, actually. You know? So me and another one, so basically we have three. I'm a Chinese at the time. I forget my new city citizenship. The other one is actually Malaysian, and the other co-founder is actually Singaporean, so three of us. So the Singaporean guy actually is the one who actually managed the business development because he knows more people. He's the people that can connect with other guys much better than two of us. So me and the other Malaysian basically is the one, the backend guys, you know, we do development for them. So he managed to find some of those clients, you know, like some of them is actually the school on the development side. And you know, that's why it's actually European unions as well. Yeah. They have office in Singapore. They want to revamp part of their website. So we do have some small business over there. But just that they know that we are students, you know, we are looking for opportunities, right? So they always squeeze us, you know, until the price is so little that we can't even afford, you know, our meals. You know? So that's a challenge part, you know, we have. So we run the startup company 6 months before we graduate. And then we still struggle another 6 months after we graduate.
Right.
So total time we spent on this first startup company is about 1 year.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And then what makes you decide that to throw in the towel and realize that maybe it's not such a good idea?
Yeah. Okay. So honestly, we have been suffering quite a lot for the first year. And both me and the Malaysians, actually, we have a lot of stress as well. We both of us are scholarship students. But after graduating, we don't really have any financial support at all. So financial is the number one thing that you kill this startup business for us.
Right.
And same thing for my co-founder, the Singaporean guys as well. He also, you know, he don't want to take any money from the family. So financial is the number one thing. As a student, we don't really have any buffer at all. So I still remember at the time I was actually staying together with my girlfriend. Now it's my wife. And I don't even have the money to pay for rent, you know, and she's the one actually helping me to pay for that. You know, so that gave me a lot of stress, you know, and three of us decided maybe it's time for us to say goodbye and then let us to gain more experience, industry experience, and at the same time maybe to accumulate some financial buffer for us for our second startup company in the future.
What's the one key lesson that you learned from that experience?
You must have a team that is able to work well together. And then you must have enough long runway, you know, because startup is actually not a sprint, it's a marathon. So we have actually financial stress. And then if we are not able to deliver something, we have to shut it down, you know. So that's the number one thing that kills us. So our runway is not long enough, you know. So, and the team's actually, honestly, because we are a first startup company, you know, it's just like a boyfriend, girlfriend, right? You always have quarrel initially for that. So for three of us, actually, we don't really know how to work together very well with each other. You know, especially by the other two co-founders, you know, seems to have a lot of a conflict. And so I'm the one trying to manage both sides to see how to resolve the conflict. And it's actually honestly very suffering for three of us together.
I see. Okay.
So, you know, we are in this kind of three-party relationship. It's not easy to manage.
Yeah, definitely. I can imagine. But after the experience, you started, of course, looking for a job.
Yeah.
How did you came about with Share Investor?
I was actually looking for a job, so I applied quite a lot. You know, I do receive a lot of offers, you know. But ShareMaster actually, they offered me the job as well. But honestly, you know, at the time, I have a few choice. But why ShareMaster becomes my first choice? Because what they are doing at the time, you know, what they are offering is the financial data for the financial market. So at that time, stock market is something that's very new to me, you know. But I always feel that, you know, there is a lot of money to be made, you know, for investing or trading, but I just don't know how, you know. But when this opportunity came, I feel that maybe it's a very good opportunity. I can learn something from there. Although the salary they offer is not the highest among all my offers, but I decided to take up this opportunity, you know, because at the time, I feel that money is not number one thing, you know, because how much big difference can you have? You know, probably just a few hundred dollars, you know, because we're just first graduated, you know, it's not much. But most important thing is, what is the opportunities, you know, what can we learn from that? So that's why I take up this offer.
Right. Okay. It dawns on me. I think that, you know, when you're explaining all your decision-making on your life journey, I feel that subconsciously, you are quite a very long-term thinker. Like you said, not just the salary at that moment, but where is the growth opportunity that you can, both in terms of when you started choosing to go into computers in university and then also choosing share investor.
Yes.
So this long-term view that you tend to have, is this something that you slowly cultivate in you, or this is just a character that you have always been like this?
That's a very good question. It's probably the first time I got this question, you know, Stanley. I never observed actually I have this my side, like, in terms of thinking about long-term, you know, for that. But probably it's something subconsciously, you know, I have in this, you know. How do I be better, you know, for that? And other someone who just focusing on the short-term games I have, you know, it's not someone actually just enjoy the temporary pressures that we have, you know, the pleasures we have. It's more that, how can we be better in futures, you know?
Of course, now, after you joined Share Investor, what was your role there at the time? And
I was actually a programmer, you know, I was doing the developments for the... At that time, ShareMaster wanted to revamp the whole website, so I was actually doing the main developments for them. I was doing programming, you know. I was there for 4 years.
Wow.
So I moved up rank every year, so from engineer to senior engineer, then became tech lead, you know, to manage the developments for that. So I managed to do a lot of financial portals, which is very big, you know. For example, the Bursa Malaysia Stock Exchange website was developed by us as well, my team. So that's something actually I feel that I'm very proud of, you know.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And of course, definitely, I think you gel well with the management and the culture over there to stay there for quite some time. But what prompt you?
Yeah.
You know, how does it go about?
Yeah.
Finally, you think that I need to throw down the towel and
throw down again
and try again.
Yeah. So I was there for 4 years. You know. Learning every single things I can learn, you know. I was just someone, I don't know why, I was just very hardworking, you know. Like I mentioned initially, I really don't know about investing and trading, but in ShareMaster, basically, we have a lot of opportunities. We partner with a lot of financial key opinion leaders, educators in the markets to teach about financial investing. And it's always the course is usually in the weekends. And I was always the one trying to volunteer. Although I'm an engineer, I said, can I volunteer to help you guys? You know, I don't need to have any offering new, but I just want to, you know, stay there and listen, you know, can I go, you know? So I always do that. And I managed to learn a lot of things from all the educators out there and managed to get to know a lot of people over there as well. So after 4 years, you know, I just feel that there's opportunities for me in the financial markets, you know, based on what I learned so far in the financial markets. And I decided to start over again. You know, there's always fire in the belly, you know, as an entrepreneur. Even you fail, but you always feel that I still want to try again. I still want to try again. Yeah, we never learn our lessons, isn't it? Right. Even it's so tough, you know. Or we just want to try again, you know.
Right. And how did the idea of investing not come about? Why do you feel that it's something that's viable?
Yeah. So it has to come to my first experience as well, you know, when I start investing. I don't really know that the stock I bought is something actually I should really put my money in. And also I just talking to my friends, you know, our colleagues, you know. But at the same time, I was actually, you know, looking at any discussion areas, you know, we have, you know. So at the time, usually it's just some forums, you know, which just have a lot of messy information over there. And it's not something actually, you know, you can find information in city and you don't know who is the other party on the IM. But at the time, actually social media is the norm, you know, over there. and something growing very fast over there as well. So I thought, why not actually I build a social network for the financial markets, you know, and bring all the key opinion leaders, educators that you guys are on board, you know, share your views about the financial markets and educate the users. And then, you know, if let's say the people want to share the contents or investing note, after 30 minutes, they can't delete it, you know, so we just want to give some credibility in terms of the people who are contributing to the contents over there.
Right.
So that's how the whole idea scene come about.
I see. Wow. Okay. Now, I'm with this strong idea that you have. Maybe your experience of discussing that with your wife, how did it go down?
Okay, so that was actually honestly a very tough decision. You know, I want to start a company. I have this rough idea, but I really don't know how to do it. But at the same time, I don't really have any co-founders at all as well, you know. I was the only one having this idea, you know. But when I tell the manager, Machi, want to resign on that, you know, they tried to retain me, you know, for that. I was really quite struggle, you know, on that because, you know, I've been with the company for 4 years and there's opportunity, you know, they want me to manage a team, you know, and for a fresh grad for working for 4 years, the ability to managing a team of a lot of people, you know, it sounds like fantastic, you know, but I was just struggling whether should I start a company again or actually, you know, stay the company while they have a management role over there. So I talked to my wife, you know, and my wife is someone who always very supportive in terms of what I do. But one good thing is she try not to influence in terms of what I think, you know. So it just helped me to analyze, you know, what I think, you know. So I tell all the rationales I have. But in the end, I still decided to quit my job because I feel that I failed one time and I've been working for 4 years. And once I commit to stay, because I am somehow actually once I commit something, I don't want to give up very easily.
Mm-hmm.
So if I commit to stay, I might be another 3 or 4 years. I don't know I'm going to have another fire in my belly until so many years later. So I decided, never mind. It's a time for me to start over again. You know, that's why I quit my jobs.
Wow. Okay. Definitely. I can already feel the stress when you're talking about it. So you tender your work and then you started working on this idea.
Yeah.
How long did you work on it to bring it up to market and how did that go?
That was tough, man. I was struggling for the first 2 years, you know, trying to find, a lot of things I was trying to find, you know. I was trying to find co-founders, I was trying to find the money, I was trying to find the direction of a company, struggling 2 years, you know. So the story is like that, you know. So initially, you know, I was the only founder in the company, you know. But then I needed some money, you know. No money, how do I find people, you know, to join my team, you know. I only worked for 4 years, I don't really have a lot of money, you know. And I was not taking any salary after I quit my job, you know. I was actually burning my own savings, you know, for the first few months. So I wanted to apply some government grants in Singapore. Singapore government is actually very nice. You know, they offer a lot of grants actually to for a startup company, mm-hmm. you know, as long as you prove them actually, this is, you have the passion, you have a team, you know, you want to do something and there's opportunities, you know, and you're clear in terms of what you're doing, right? So they will offer to support for you. So I tried to offer this, I mean, tried to apply for this grant. But then the requirement is I need to have another co-founders at this, you know, so I know that this is something actually I need as well, because at the time I was really a hardcore programmer, you know, but I was not really a guy like salesperson or business development guy, so or relationship manager, that kind of people. So I was trying to find a co-founder who can join me, you know, and I managed to find a friend who is such a remisier, you know. I thought that having a remisier as a co-founder is great because they have all the clients, you know, and they can bring, imagine they can bring all the remisers to come on board, and every remiser bring all the clients. So we are going to be flooded with all the people's. You know, so sometimes, you know, dream is actually very easy, you know, but reality is very tough, you know. So I have a few, the other two co-founders as well, and one is a data scientist, one is an engineer, and so four as a common board, you know, and we managed to get a Singapore government grant for that.
Mm.
And we managed to hire some people as well, but the grant is actually only $50,000.
Right.
Yeah, it's not really a lot, you know, consider that it's a startup company at the beginning, and we need to hire, and we need to do marketing, all those. After half a year, we finish all the monies that we have, you know, and the co-founders feel that Shelly so much, we are, you know, I mean, the co-founders that I have is actually part-time co-founders.
Right.
They never quit their jobs. I never managed to convince them, you know, to join my company as a full-time co-founders. So after half a year, they feel that the company is struggling, it's tough, you know, and we are running out of money, you know, and I feel that, Shanison, I just feel that you are the one trying to push forward, but we, as a co-founder, we are dragging you down, you know. That's what they feel, you know. So they say, Shanison, I'm actually, I to a thief, you know. I'm so sorry for that, you know. So three of co-founders leave one by one, you know, for that. And I, back to one person again, I was struggling a lot, you know, for that, you know. And at that time, I was really lost, you know. And my child was born, you know. My son was born at that time where I was actually, you know, in a moment, I don't know how to do it, you know. Let God give me a kid.
How are you making ends meet at this period? How is the website making money?
At that time, actually, the company was almost closing down, you know, because I don't know how to continue for that. And I have a lot of friends actually doing startup company, and we are in the same incubator, you know, because I was using the office in the US, you know, incubator. They are so nice to offer to alumni like us. So some of my friends to tell me that the Shenzhen investor is there, you know, just give up, you know, because you have no one, you know, and you have no money at all, you know, why not join me, you know, in my company, you know. So startup founders is like, you know, a lot of them are good salesperson, and they want to convince you, you know, to join them, you know. So at that time I was lost. So I really think that maybe it's time to declare death for investing, you know. So I really joined him. I tried to help him in a bit, you know, for a few months. But it's actually my wife actually remind me, you know. So Shanice, why have been doing this a few months, you know? I know you're struggling for investing now. Then I was so embarrassed to tell her, you know, actually, you know, I was, you know, working in another startup company, you know. It's just only after 1 year, you know, the company has struggled and I go into another company. And he feel that it's actually very hard to focus on two things, you know, at one time. Although one thing is very struggling and you have a kid, you know, another company, what are you going to do? So it made me wonder, maybe I should actually, you know, go back to, you know, the original idea, why I started a company. It's not because I want to join another friend's, you know, startup, which is about dating, you know, which is not something actually I'm passionate about. I already have a wife. I'm not interested in dating anymore, you know. So I thought that finance is something actually I want to go back to. So I tell my friends, hey, I don't want to help you anymore. You know, whatever work I have done, you know, you just keep to yourself. I'm not going to claim anything I have. You know, I want to go back to investing though.
This actually happened quite often in startup. As the founder is the only one that is driving the project forward, it's very easy to lose momentum and lose faith in the project. Shenniston was lucky that he was reminded by his wife to continue to pursue his dream. Starting a business is always a high-risk, high-stress endeavor. So I believe that having the right life partner in this pursuit is extremely important. Shenniston is definitely having the kind of support from his wife that he needs.
So I start to restore everything I have, no matter it's actually finding co-founders. You know, I do have a mentors helping me to find co-founders, and I start to continue to do development for the platforms. And I start thinking about how to do marketing, and I start to taking a lot of online courses and books, you know, to learn about different kind of areas to, you know, strengthen myself, you know, to prepare for this. Yeah, but there's opportunity came. Basically, is Share Investor CEO, you know, and COO, they are co-founders for Share Investor. So after 1.5 years, you know, onto investing or struggling, almost closed down. So they give me a call, say, Shanison, what have you been doing so far? You know, they have some opportunities and they have some clients, you know, and they probably can collaborate or they can, you know, maybe get my help to do some developments because they know actually I'm very good at doing developments, you know, programming side. So at the time, actually, I've been not talking to them, I've been avoiding a bit talking to them. The reason is I was also in the financial space, you know, although it's a bit different. We are doing community, they are doing financial data, but I don't know what they are going to think about me, you know, in a way, you know.
Yep.
But when he gave me a call, I tell my wife, I'm going to tell him honestly, what am I working on? Because investing is at this kind of cruel junctions, right? Who knows? And honestly, in my heart, actually, I need to talk to him because we've been working closely for so many years. And why do I have to shut down a communication channel? It doesn't make sense.
Yep.
You know, and I talked to him. I bring him to my office, a small incubation room over there. And then I share with him, what am I doing? And he feels like, wow, this is something that can complement to Share Investor's offering. But Share Investor at that time was subsidiary under SPH,
yep,
Singapore Press Holding. So he said that I can help you to have an opportunity to pitch to the SPH board, you know. And that what he did, you know, after a few months, he helped me to arrange the pitching. And thankfully, the pitching went very well. Share Investor, CEO and CEO, the co-founders, they also put money into the company as individual investor. And the SPH invest in our company with Share Investor, you know, into our company.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how we have a second life, you know, for investing. But that was after 2 years, you know, since I started company. So for 2 years, I was struggling here and there, you know, and finding directions.
Wow, what a new turn of event once you started talking to them. But when you are pitching it to SPH and to Share Investor, were the Investing Note already having a good community? Was it already vibrant?
No, not at all. It's still idea stage.
Right, okay.
So as I mentioned, the corona life and everything, right? We didn't manage to get into the markets at all because we don't have any money to do the marketing at all as well. And so I was the only one person again, you know? So that's why I was so thankful that, you know, I able to get this opportunity, you know? How can I invest a company just at one guy, at one idea? And I tell them that I'm going to build a team, you know, with this. And they trust me to do that, you know? And probably see that how I struggled in 2 years, but I never give up. You know, they see someone, you know, especially for a lot of investors and VCs, they want to invest in someone. Usually they don't see the ideas, but they want to see a team, the people, you know, who are able to push through, you know?
Right. Right. Wow. That's quite impressive. And, you know, from, I don't know the management of Share Investor and also the board, how they think, but from your story, I feel that, you know, it's less so about you pitching them that idea, but rather they really have this trust in you. And I guess you, when your time with them, you have really impressed them. And there is really a vote of confidence in Shaniston. It's yourself. In pushing this idea forward, and that's what they are betting on.
I think you're just lucky, you know. So managed to get a trust, and they trust me so well. So I'm forever thankful to them. So wherever I share about my startup experience, you know, I always, you know, share about this story, because if not because of CEO and COO, the company has already died. You know, I won't be able to be here. So I always thankful for anyone who helped me along the journey.
So the lifeline for Investing Note came from this chance meeting. Life really works at such mysterious way. When he was explaining this part of the journey to me, I started remembering this famous speech by Steve Jobs, where he said that we can never connect the dots of our life forward, we can only connect them backwards. So even before Shaniston has any plan for Investing Note, his years of working with Share Investor was so critical to its success, because he must have done a great job there and impressed his bosses. And that led to the key investment into Investing Note for the future.
You know, even my friends who actually asked me, Shaniston, investor is there, I'm still thankful for him as well. Because without that, I might not be able to pull back my forces back to Investing Note 100%. It's only for that few months that I'm helping him, you know, I managed to clear my thoughts that I need to come back, you know, for that.
Right.
You know, so although he was telling my email story there, but I'm still thankful for him.
Yeah. And of course your wife on definitely clearing up your thinking as well. Right.
She's a strong woman behind me.
And that's amazing. I always feel that, you know, having a good marriage is half the battle done.
That's right.
So right now with the new injection of capital from Share Investor, and also the potential of collaboration between Investing Note and Share Investor, everything should be good now, right? So what happened next?
I mean, raising money at that point, you know, the feeling is definitely fantastic, right? So, you know, it feels like from 0 to 1, but in reality, it's not from 0 to 1 as well. Because I just have the money, you know, but I didn't have a team yet, so I need to find the team actually to join me, you know, the people actually to restart over again, you know. So I was actually fortunate to have a lot of team members join me. You know, Ethan, you know, he has been with me since the early days, since 2016, and Stanley is very familiar with him as well. So he has been investing for many years, you know, start helping me with the marketing, you know, pushing into the markets, you know, bringing users into the platform. So with that, you know, I always thankful for a team who have been helping me on the journey for so many years. But at that time, you know, having a team is the first challenge, but how do we build a product better? How do we actually, without spending more money in the markets to get users is also a challenge. So there's a lot of challenge actually at the beginning, you know, for that. And having some money is just the first step, you know, for that.
Right. How long did it take you from getting the fresh injection of capital to building up a sizable team and you feel that you're ready to go to market? How long?
After I raised the funds, actually, I spent another close to 1 year, you know, wow. for me to have a better product and start to get some tractions for that, you know. So that was in 2015, you know, when mid-2015 I received the money. I built a company in 2013, you know, so about 2 years, right? So in 2016, actually, we pushed out to the markets, you know, to mass market, collaborate with a lot of key opinion leaders, educators, reminders, and also the school, university clubs, you know, so that's where actually we grow quickly on that. So it take quite some time, you know, for that, right? Especially because we are a community business. A community business is not easy to start at the beginning, you know.
Wow. Okay. And once you're starting getting a little bit of traction on the platform, what was the main idea? How are you planning to make money from Investing Note?
At the time, actually, I have never thought about actually making money at all. You know, so really, it's probably a trend at that time for a lot of startup company. You know, we focus on user acquisitions, page views, you know, traffic. You know, and I also have the same mindset as, if I manage to get users and traffic, you know, and I'm able to raise the funds, you know, and with the funds, let me think about how to make money. It's happened to a lot of startup companies as well. They never thought about how to make money, you know, over there, not just keep raising the funds and all that. But that gave me a big problem, actually, you know, having that kind of mindset, you know. So this is what happens, you know, after 1 or 2 years, you know, we have some tractions and I was trying to raise the funds again. Then at that time, actually, I was trying to ask Shamrock, the CEO, against help, you know, to see that, hey, how about, you know, you guys can put in more money and then we pitch to SPH to put in more money as well. So for the second round of injection, and then we can grow in the market bigger as well. So at the time, he feel that he has been talking to SPH board and generally they're actually quite, you know, supportive. They feel that should be okay. And share investor CEO and CEO personally, they feel that they want to, I mean, they committed to put some money as well into a company. But they are trying to arrange a pitching date for me, but it's not, I mean, especially what it's been quite busy as well, you know, it's not easy to arrange a day. But the challenge is I'm running out of money, you know, I only have 1 or 2 months salary left, you know, for that, for a team. So, but 1 month before my salary run out, you know, they actually managed to have a pitching session for me, you know. But unfortunately, you know, there's something happens, you know, and SPH board actually decide not to actually invest, you know, for that.
Okay.
There's some personal reasons actually with one of the board members over there. But what happens is after this incident, you know, share investor CEO and CEO say that originally commit some money to invest into a company. They say they can still put in money as an individual investor in it. But to show commitment, Shanison, you also must put in money yourself, you know. And the original amount is actually put in, they were actually reduced by half. I mean, I can understand because the anchor investor actually didn't put in money. So the risk is going up and they need to have someone to have, as a founder, to have more confidence and commitment for a company. By the time actually I have running out of my savings at all, really I have zero savings. I told my wife, you know, I come back to my wife again, the short woman behind me. So I told my wife, the Investing Note again is at this moment of life or death again, you know, and these are situations. And I want to borrow some money for you to put into Investing Note, you know. This is the only way for me to save the company. And my wife actually never think twice, you know. She support me in this. So basically she put in the money. I mean, she's not a real shareholder, but she lent me money to put into it. And then share with CEO and share with the CEO put some money.
Wow.
Then after that, I quickly changed my mindset. You know, I'm not doing the burning money and raising the funds, that kind of game anymore. I start to make, I try to make the platform, whatever way we can make money, I do it. So within half a year, actually, we are become, you know, make a lot of money, you know, general revenues. And then after 1 year, actually, we have become profitable.
Wow.
So that's the way actually we try to do that. It changed my mindset also when all this happens in the university.
Well, this is the second time Investing Note might have failed. When your anchor investor decided not to invest anymore, it became almost impossible to raise any new money. So although Shanison was able to find some smaller investment through his wife and his ex-bosses, he knew that this would be the last time that Investing Note can raise any meaningful funds. And if Investing Note is to survive, it will really need to start to stand on its own. So Shaniston is now on a mission to turn Investing Note into a profitable business. How do you go about monetizing the site? How do you see the whole platform and then end up monetizing the platform? Is it mainly still similar to, you know, other platforms like Facebook on just advertising predominantly? Or
initially, actually, it's more advertising for that. So we have the EDM base, we have the platforms, you know, we have a sponsor post because we are something like a Facebook but for investors and traders.
Mm.
So initially, the model is quite similar, right? So basically, what we are doing is we helping those stockbrokers, remisers, Singapore Stock Exchange, you know, and product issuers, fund, you know, as well, to create awareness, you know, to reach out to a retail base as well. So this is actually one of the main business model we have. Even until now, we are doing a lot of customized campaign for these people and this partner. It's not just about advertising, you know, it's about customizing campaign, activate our user base, you know, for our users. But at the same time, we have another marketplace, which is actually a premium contents. So we partner with our key opinion leader to generate, you know, monthly, you know, pay content, and user has to pay a monthly fee for that. And then we take a cut on that. You know, so these are two major things actually we are making money for now.
Wow, amazing. From there on, there's less financial stress on the company. And then you can focus a lot more on trying to make it a better product and expand. So was it all smooth sailing after that?
I mean, definitely not. I mean, startup company is never smooth sailing, you know, for that, you know. And I mean, we try to make more money and generate revenue and break even, you know. But we also have a challenge, you know, even you know, until now, you know. So how do we grow bigger in terms of community, and how do we balance between making money and growing a community? So this is a challenge we have, you know, even until now. You know, while having financial is great, but then at the same time, you might sacrifice a bit in terms of the speed of growth. While looking at other companies like Shopee, you know, Facebook or whatever, you know. So they pump in money to grow a market quickly, you know. After that, they fix the way how they are doing the business model and that. But not anyone can be so lucky to go to that sector size. Not anyone can be like that to have the trust of all the VCs and pumping in all the money into it. So we are just a small company and we're trying to find a way to survive, you know. After incidents of company almost bankrupt or closed down for 2 times. So I feel that having survival is such a number one thing for that.
You know? A key development for Investing Note later at this stage is which you merge with Share Investor.
Yes, that's right.
Of course, Share Investor also going through their own restructuring as well with their management buyout. So, you know, since you say that you're already profitable, why do you see the need to merge the company together?
That's a good question. You know, so Share Investor, basically, I think a few years ago, they have a management buyout, they buy back from SPH, so they become a private company again. So the management has more freedom in terms of what they want to do, you know, for the company instead of actually every time to seek SPH approval. For my case, it's actually, you know, our company has been profitable for a few years, right? But at the same time, I just thinking, how can I grow bigger, you know? But personally, I feel that we are hitting a certain bottleneck as well, you know? I also don't know how can I grow bigger. You know, I was trying to find opportunities, you know, and I also talked to some investors as well, you know, are we able to raise some funds, you know, how can we be better, you know, and bigger? At the same time, Share Investor is thinking about, you know, how to consolidate resources and restructuring. So basically what happened is last year, during the Chinese New Year, I have, you know, live sessions, you know, with my two investors, Share Investor CEO and COO. So we are having a lunch session. So we are talking about all the challenges and opportunities that we have. And then we are thinking, it seems that there's some opportunities between the two companies. And frankly, both of two companies, actually, we are targeting the same audience. You know, it's just that we are offering different things. What if actually we put in the two company resources together? And then can we actually go bigger or not? Right. So this is a thought behind that. And a lot of people asking me who actually initiated that. So I tell them that I can't really tell you why. The reason is I also don't know who, because it's just a natural conversations when you talk about the opportunity and challenges, right? Then we are thinking about, hey, it's too sad, we can do something about that. So the whole conversation started since last year, February, you know, for Chinese year, until actually we closed the whole deals, you know, end of last year, December, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so it take about close to 1 year, you know, for these things, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then now, when you announced this deal to your team, What's their response? Were they excited or?
Okay, so it's actually something I share with them. You know, why am I doing it? I think as a leader, it's actually very important to share within the thought process. It's not just to, you know, tell them, I got to do this, you know, either you follow or don't follow, you know, this is not the right way to do it. You know, I always, you know, share with them, why am I doing this, you know. And I have a team of people from Malaysia. I fly all of them actually kind of Singapore. You know, I haven't told them, well, I'm going to share with them these things yet, but I fly all of them come here because I feel this is one of the major decisions, one of the major milestones for a company. I need to talk to them face to face. I need to share with them. So all of them come to Singapore and then I share with them the reasons behind that, you know, the opportunities we have in future. Then I get a support from the team, you know, for that, you know, and I was very thankful for the teams for understanding, you know, in terms of what I have been, you know, doing for that. And after the mergers, and they're still with me, you know, for that. I was very thankful for that. Although it's a big difference, you know, because last time we were a small team. We only had a team of 7 people. You know, it's a very small team. Now we have an office in Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Thailand. We have a total staff strength of more than 100 plus people.
Wow.
So there is a good big difference actually in terms of the culture, you know, team management. So it's something actually for us to see. It's like a marriage, you know, how do we actually, you know, can come closer together and at the same time, you know, to have a smooth sailing futures, you know, hopefully.
What has been the challenges, you know, after the merger, do you feel is your key challenge right now?
Okay, so for me, actually, after the merger, basically my portfolio grow bigger, you know, I have a bigger team as well, right? So I have a team. So basically a whole share investor investor group. So we have two main business. One is IR business. It's an online IR. So we have a listed company for Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Thailand. So they are our clients. On the other hand, we call it investor platform business, which is the one that we, on my side, I'm actually managing both investing node and share investor platform. And then I also manage the advertisements and events, you know, like big events like Invest Fair, the recent symposium, just all managed by my team, you know, for that. So the big challenge, I think, is actually, you know, we have much bigger portfolio right now. And how do I actually have a balance between, you know, this, you know, previously I just had focused on investing, you know. But my mind is actually, I need to think about both. And share investor platform and investing node platform, how do I find a better position for both of them? And how do I actually make sure both can both be get together? So these are things actually we are working on there. And I think this is something actually will be exciting coming up also.
Right. And one new development, of course, is you have been pushing hard to expand, to grow the community here in Malaysia.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit more of the thought process? Because do you feel that you have already sort of saturated the Singapore investing community? Because definitely in my mind, Investing Node is now the largest investing community in Singapore, much more than any other even website or forum, right? Is that the idea that you feel that this has already been saturated and it's time to move to another market?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually really one of the thoughts as well, you know, for Singapore markets. And there's still way to grow, definitely, you know. But we are thinking, actually, when you grow to a certain size, you know, and instead of taking every single one of them actually in the single market to be your users, you know, compared to the other way you enter into new markets and try to get people into it, which one is easier, you know. So we thought that actually having both definitely is better. You know, but with the limited resources, you know, so our single side is more about monetizations, you know, how do we make more money, you know, having contributed more value for our partners. On Malaysia side, we are thinking about how can we grow the new markets. So there's a new engine, actually, you know, growth engine for us, you know, for that. So that's really the thought process.
Wow. Just listening to your entire journey, it's quite an adventure that you have been, right? And there's so many point of time in investing though that you could have given up but you did not. And this is something that I realized from a lot of entrepreneurs as well, right? This never say die attitude. Right. And of course, definitely you have that in you as well. Do you feel this is something that is just innate in you that you don't want to give up on something that you work so hard on? Or it is something that you can cultivate? Is a character that you feel that you've been it's been trained up over time?
This is interesting because I think one of the things actually when you're doing something, you must have a strong passion, you know. Really must something actually you believe in, something that you feel that you really want to do it, and you can actually continue doing it even as there's a challenge in between. But imagine you are doing something. I imagine just like my story is my friends are asking me to do a dating website, you know, for that. But imagine actually I started with that, but dating is not something actually I'm passionate about. Even it managed to grow, you know, I might not be able to continue working there, you know, or not to mention actually if let's say they are very challenging, you know, for the startup, you know, I might give up very easily because it's not something I actually wanted to do, right? It's just that having kids as well. I have two kids right now, 9 and 5 years old. So I always tell them, kids, you know, you must have a passion in terms of what you're doing. You know, I don't want to force you to train something that you don't like at all. So I observed the kids, you know, that for example, my son, you know, he went for a lot of sports. And then I observed that he actually liked badminton a lot. You know, so I sent him to badminton schools. And then now he actually played very well, you know, but he liked it so much, you know. Like, for example, I tell him that, so I booked the badminton course at 8 o'clock in the morning. Then 7 o'clock, he wake up, you know, and he prepared for badminton because he just enjoys so much, you know. This is, I feel that passion is the number one thing you must have, you know. If you are not, basically, it's against yourself. You know? So your heart and the way you are moving forward, it must be in line, you know, to do that. So, and why I never give up probably is I'm a stubborn person. You know, my wife always tell me, actually, you are very stubborn on that. You know? So probably that's come back to my DNA as well.
I see. Yeah. You know, being self-motivated is one thing, but motivating your team is another, right? How would you describe your management style on how do you keep the team motivated, especially through the previous tough time?
Yeah. When actually the company almost bankrupt and we didn't manage to raise a second round, I didn't tell them at all. Mm. You know? So I keep all this stress actually to myself because I feel that the company is already trying to grow. I don't want to share something which I can personally take. You know, it's, I have to swallow this by myself, you know, and let the team focus on what they are doing best, you know, for that.
Mm.
But for a team, actually, I give them a lot of freedoms in terms of what they want to do, you know, because I feel that essentially for managing a team, you must have a trust in the people that you have. I do have some people actually joined my team previously, but we just feel that we cannot trust each other, and I didn't hesitate to let them go, you know. But once we have a trust over there, I give them all freedoms to do. And I always tell them that if you think that this is the one thing actually you want to try and you think that this is the best, you know, even I think it's different, I will let them try, you know. Because it doesn't mean I tell you it's wrong. Doesn't mean it's wrong. You know, you have to try it, you know. But for me, my job is I tell you that what is going to happen, but I will manage the calculated risk for the company. But you must go and try it. After that, you grow stronger and grow bigger and grow better. And that's how you can support a company, you know. So this is a way actually I do work together with the team.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I'm so happy that my team has been working with me so many years, you know. Mm-hmm. And our team member has been with me for many years, you know. Mm-hmm.
Right, you allow them to experiment and, you know, you don't worry that if they fail, that at least they give it a try to see where it leads. That's amazing. I always, because I'm a father myself as well, with 4 kids. And so,
amazing. That's really amazing. 4 kids, I can imagine.
And I always think of, you know, not just providing for them, but rather how do you cultivate the qualities that you want in them and to make sure that they are successful, successful in their life.
Yeah.
So what's your philosophy on that? Do you encourage your kids also to bring out the entrepreneurial spirit in them, or it doesn't really matter to you? What are the key qualities that you want to convey to them?
I'm not sure actually there's any kind of study, you know, why people want to start a company. Is it because of family, or is it because of DNA, or is it because of education? I don't know where there's any study for that. But generally, I feel there's two things that are very important. First thing is actually education, the family, right? So how do you want to educate the family? Like my father, actually, when I was young, he never asked me, you must do this, you know. But I just through the things he did, now I feel that probably something actually I want to be in future as well, you know. And probably that kind of influence is something that you don't tell them, but it's such a bigger influence for the kids, you know. But you keep telling something, kids sometimes will just don't want to do it, you know, especially when they grow bigger. You tell them to do something, they don't want to do something. But you don't tell something, but you show and you act for that, they will actually follow, you know. So that's something actually I feel that in terms of my way of actually staying together with kids and nurturing them and educating them is through my own actions. Even I tell the kids, right, I don't tell you that you must read books, you know, like 2 hours a day or whatever. I read the books together with them, you know. I show them that I also love reading books. I always bring them to the library every one time, per 2 weeks time, you know. So that's something actually I show them what we are doing. But for kids, actually, I don't really expect them to do something entrepreneur or whatever. I don't really have expectation for that. It really comes to his own passion and how he will be in future as well. I just, you know, having a kid is, you just want to be a good kid, you know, don't do bad stuff in future, you know, and be a nice person to anyone. And then that's the best wish I see a family have in as well.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And throughout your journey, you have, experienced all the highs and the lows. Right now, the company is in a good place, right? And so at this point of time, at this stage of your life, how do you define success? What is successful to you now, Shenison?
I never think about success or actually I'm success or, you know, because having a success or fail is actually a two extremes with that, you know, and sometimes it might be scary. Like, for example, a company almost died. I never thought about it's scary because I fail, you know. It's just scary because what I wanted to do, you know, at the beginning, you know, my thought process, you know, it doesn't materialize, you know. When you want to do something, but it doesn't work, you know, that's something actually be scary. But it's not about having failure and people will laugh at you and you have a tag to say that this guy is a failure, you know. So I don't really define by that as well. And success, I mean, I don't really define success because there's always a lot of challenge. You know, people will feel that, wow, maybe you guys have reached a certain stage. It looks like a very good success outside, you know. But internally, I shared with you just now, you know, that's a challenge, right, to grow a company. And every stage has a different kind of challenge. And how do you continue to bring the company to the next level is a challenge. You know, so you never thought about, I'm successful already, I'm very comfortable, you know. And the moment you feel that I'm comfortable already and very successful already, probably there's a time the company is dying. You know, so I never really thought about that as well, you know.
Right. Very wise words. And before we go, one of the questions that I always try to understand from my interviewees is, you know, throughout the past decade, if you have to do it all over again, right?
Yeah.
What are the things that maybe you will do differently, or what are the things that you have maybe regret?
It's just that my thinking is actually quite a bit different. You know, look at my journey. My startup journey is actually not very typical. You know, all the startup journey that you have read from the newspapers, whatever, right, is always very fast, you know, and they grow very fast. It's either they die, disappear, you know, after 1 or 2 years, or they're still there and very strong, right? And after a few years, they realize they cannot make money or close down, right? So this is usually a story. But for me, is I struggle a lot in the first few years. Then after that, I raise some money and slowly grow, you know, make money. So I would say that it's a bit more slow and steady growth, you know, over there. But then for me, right, if I go back time, you know, which is close to past 8 or 9 years ago for that, I would say that I would probably make the same mistake again. You know, I would do the same thing again. The reason is, if you look at me 8 years ago, I'm still a person who lack of experience. I'm still a person who lack of financial knowledge or lack of financial, you know, backup also at the time. You know, so I probably have to make the same mistake again to go to a person who I am today. You know, so I will not able to do it. But the other way is, if let's say I'm putting myself right now back 8 years ago, then I probably do a lot of things differently. I'll probably shorten the start journey from 8 years or something to be a bit shortened to be 3 or 4 years. You know, so I don't have to take such a long journey to go to a company at a time. You know, so, and that's the best thing such I ever earned, you know, for having a startup journey to shape who I am today. You know, it's not about financial stuff, it's about the experience I have, it's about shaping who I am today. You know,
that's amazing. I really enjoyed my talk with you, Shenison.
Thank you, Stanley.
I hope we have another opportunity to chat again next time.
Thank you, Stanley. Maybe next time we'll talk about family and the kids. You know?
Wait for my next podcast.
thank you, everyone.
Shenison is now busy building the business outside of Singapore and is leading a team more than 100 employees across the region. After its merger with Share Investor, the group CEO, Mr. Christopher Lee, is now planning an IPO for the group within the next few years. So I think the best is yet to come for Shenison and his team, and I'll definitely be rooting for them.
Till we meet again, stay safe.
I'm Stanley, and you have been listening to The Asian Mavericks, produced by Value Invest Asia. If you like this show, please give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, if you know of the perfect candidate for us to interview for our next episode, you can always reach out to us through our social media. Thank you. Until we meet again, stay safe.